Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
We've talked a lot. You've had to take a lot in. The broad theme for the discussion or the questions is about supporting vulnerable young people in the present climate. And all I will say is this. We've heard that we've got quite a strong and robust legal framework, new regulations, new guidance. You've heard all about it. And at the same time, as you've heard very ably from the last presentation from Sarah, of course, we've got major reductions in services and major changes in services, not just reductions, changes in services. So people who are responsible for managing, supporting young people leaving care, of course, are faced with that dilemma. So we have an expert panel, the Care Leavers Association, with Claire and Darren, we have Sarah, we have Martin, and Mary's joined us as well from the Social Care Institute of Excellence.
For excellence, sorry.
These words are important, ofs and fors. Okay, so please, it's open to questions for you. You've sat and listened through a lot. Yes, just say who you are, and then if you want anybody specifically to address the question to, that's great.
Jerry Thompson, Catch 22, Wandsworth, on manager of Wandsworth Leaving Care Team. A lot of things have come out of several of the presentations around, I think yours, the continuity of care, that it's something that's going 16 right through people's lives. We've talked quite a lot really around how the leaving care services have been extended really for those that are still in education and employment or want to return. But there's less a question really than a raising an issue. There's two important barriers for young people that disrupt that transition. One is when they turn 19, when they lose access to children's and adolescent services. And that's a very different point of access. It's very difficult for some of these young people who have mental health difficulties, moderate learning difficulties, conduct disorders, those sort of things, to access services at that age, in adult services. They then hit another artificial barrier at 21, because a lot of the more vulnerable young people are actually least likely to be in education and employment. And if they haven't resolved those difficulties at 21, they then lose a leaving care personal advisor, and they still can't access adult services. So I think it's not just about what leaving care services develop, it's actually how we can work better with adult services to meet their needs.
Yep, that's great. Does anybody want to start on that? Who would like to answer that question? Claire, well, are you volunteering?
Could I say something simply because as well, first of all, just to address your point, yeah, absolutely. I think Darren and myself had a discussion when we were putting together the presentation how important it is to have joined up services. And I think Darren gave the example of access to records, but that goes across the board. It goes especially for mental health, of course. That's a massive issue in terms of how CAMHS communicates with adult services. But as we've seen, it also goes with housing. You know, there's lots of adults in houses as well as young people, and presumably those young people will turn into adults and they will be getting support of those housing providers. So it's a case of, yeah, how does that all join together? And, it's a really important point. So we as an organisation, I think we'd probably say that we're looking to work, certainly at the strategy weekend last year when we first started, there was a lot of talk about perhaps being one of the lead people in educating the adult service providers, for example, the psychiatrists or the doctors, in terms of what are the needs of care leavers and what do you do when somebody presents themselves as a care leaver. On that note as well, could I also just say I've got the guide now. So apologies, I should have brought that on with me because I have put a lot of work into that, and so the young people's team. It's available for free. It's not something that we're selling. It's going to be on our website, and as I say, it's going to be a quarterly thing. So it's called Leaving Care. We've been there.
That's great. That's okay. Lovely. Anybody else want to comment on that? Mary?
Just briefly, the Social Care Institute for Excellence, where I work, we've been doing some work recently on transitions, so very much around mental health services for children and young people. And I acknowledge all the issues that you say, there are real problems. But we did a practice survey, and we did find there are some services, as you will know, where really people are trying to bridge that gap and not have this arbitrary cut-off point at 16 or 18. They are often in the third and voluntary sector, and I do understand all the issues around the statutory sector. I'm not negating any of those issues, but where those services are up and running and they can cross the barriers, and often offer services to young people up to about the age of 25. And then it can be so that young people, once they hit that sort of age, 25, 26, they don't need services in quite the same, because they've actually had transition and some of their mental health issues have resolved. And so, in a way, you can be actually saving resources by offering these sort of one-stop shop services that don't have this arbitrary cut-off points. And there are lots of practice examples in the guide, which is going to be published quite soon.
I mean, what would make sense would be that the services are contracted to leading care services so that the personal advisor can continue to offer that support as they would to young people who are education, employment and training.
Yes.
That would be the kind of consistent... I think that's what young people want. There's one of the research studies I reviewed that, that they found leading care services were doing a great job with very vulnerable young people. And the thought of that suddenly ending, especially as you need a clinical diagnosis often to access adult services, would leave a big gap. So people thinking imaginatively about the possibility of those being commissioned back to... in the age of commissioned back to leaving care services, at least that would be a consistent.
Yes.
At the moment, you're likely to have the contradiction of some of the most vulnerable young people who aren't in education, employment and training, not getting that support, whereas we've heard from earlier that those 25-plus who start education late could continue to get support till they're nearly 30, and that isn't right. OK, any more questions? Yeah. Could you say who you are and just what your question is?
From Voice, that's the organisation. We haven't heard the word apathy, and I really wanted just to raise the issue.
The
word apathy yet for in terms of this advocacy. Debate so far. Advocacy. What we've heard this morning is the complexity of what the young people have to deal with, from law, housing, emotional support, access to records, all these issues. And it's just, I'd like the panel just to think about the kind of support we want to see in this country that is actually available universally to children leaving care to ensure that they do actually get that emotional support. Certainly the work we did on in Blueprint and Child Centred Care System, at least having the minimal of a single adult. Now, no doubt some of the care leaving services provide that kind of support, including emotional support, that young people need. But where that isn't available, it does seem that independent advocacy is a really important thing that should be available.
Do you want people's views on that?
I want to think about how you access your rights and how important that is, and how the children in care get the advice and advocacy that they may need when they leave care.
Martin, did you want to start from that? Darren, would you like to start as well? So Martin, start off,
I think my starting point is what you said then about the importance of relationships, because I think Jerry's question as well is all about young people having at least one person that they have a very close relationship with. It's always been a bit of a mystery to me that children in care in particular have so many adults in their lives, and if they haven't got that one relationship, then I wonder what the system's been doing. And in that sense, advocacy becomes important at that point. I always think it's a bit of an admission of failure, though, if there's a need for even more people to be added in at that stage, whilst I recognise that young people are in that position. But I think somehow our systems need to recognise that the first and most important thing is the relationship that you have with young people. And I think many people have managed to do that. It may be chance in some cases. You hit upon the person you can have the relationship with. But that's
okay, that's an interesting perspective. Darren, do you want to comment on that?
I guess advocacy is important. But we do have a lot of young people. I'm going to say young people, I use that in a broader sense of the term, up to the age of 25, 26, 27, who are coming through to us. For example, the new guidelines from 2011 say you can go back into HE after the age of 21 and have all of your pathway plan and services switched back on following an assessment and search. However, often people will come through and say they're not getting these services, or the local authority are not telling them what they need to know. Who can you put us in touch with? So we look for an advocacy service, but the advocacy service often cuts off at 19, 20, 21. So that person who's 22, 23, 24 can't have an advocacy service because it's not there to provide for them. So it is important for them to have that service, but it's important to recognise that there are gaps also in terms of people being able to access an advocacy service, and we need to be looking at that, making sure that more people are actually captured when it comes to advocacy, because it is important that they have an important adult or somebody to support them.
And your organisation perhaps offers that to some people?
Our organisation often refers to Voice, often refers to other advocacy services in their locality. Yeah. And we find often that people are coming back to us and saying they've told us that I'm too old to get any service.
Yeah, okay. Right, another question, please. Yeah. Could you just say who you are and ask your question? Thanks.
Councillor John Huff from Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
Aside from the services, I'm just slightly uncomfortable about talking about leaving care when the people from Care Leavers Association just basically said that all the research was showing them that people feel, even when they're in their 70s and 80s, that they still haven't had the support. And I just wonder, leaving care is basically a technical term because that's what is set up in legislation. Should we be talking about care, because another slide said that was important, rather than talking about leaving care? And how can we actually do it better, not just for young people, but throughout the rest of their lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a grounded term. I mean, because I'm finishing another book at the moment on leaving care, and I asked young people a lot about it, what to call it. And they were almost unanimously favouring leaving care. I mean, rather than transitions from care to adulthood or becoming adult or all these things, even though the new transitions guidance is transitions from care to adulthood, although it amends the leaving care legislation. I think what matters probably is the quality of services that young people get. I think that probably matters more than struggling too much with the term. I mean, you're right, obviously care is what I want people through their lives, and that does make that broader connection. Yeah.
Noel McDermott, psychotherapist, formerly senior manager in social services and all that stuff. I've worked with thousands of families and children and stuff over the years, so until the last 25 years. And now I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm there. Because of the complexity of the situations that many people, not just people who go into care, young people, children going to care, but families, etc., facing the fragmentation of services that does exist and has always existed in this country and actually will continue to exist.
Yeah.
So that's a reality. And I think, you know, if you then pile on top the fact that somebody goes into care and generally not because their parents have been killed in a car accident, unfortunately, because a series of events will have led them to that point. So they come with some baggage, if you like, something that's been given to them. I guess what I'm interested in is some of the things that have been talked about advocacy, about relationships, about the internal skills that young people need to be given, as opposed to the sort of patchwork quilt of services that somehow get placed on top of them as a justification for the existence of these services. Have we got it the wrong way round, is what I'm asking. You know, with the review of child protection services, it was clear that we had to put the child and their needs first. And I still don't think we've got it the right way round in care services for kids.
Okay, let's put that. Who wants to start on that one?
Very quick observation, just to say that Mike and Isabel Brody wrote some work for us for the Centre for Excellence and Outcomes, which some reports very well worth reading. We've just been doing some work on updating that, and one of the things that struck me when I was reading through some of the material is that we need to give young people these high aspirations, of course we do, but somehow we need to help young people have these high, internalise, if you like, these high aspirations. I've lost the plot about what the question really was, but it's
about
something...
the fragment, whether
exactly.
Whether the current fragmentation of services can actually meet the continuity and attachment and stable needs
of
young people.
Well, that's all I really... Yeah. I agree with you about fragmentation, but we need somehow as workers to... And it's not an easy task, but to really... give people, young people, high aspirations and also make them feel that, you know, to have those skills and abilities to really make them feel that they can go out there and do these things and have high aspirations for them. Don't know if that's really very...
Martin and Darren,
I'm going to move on.
I think I agree with you. And I think that things are moving very slowly. I think one of the striking things about the social work, and I'm thinking particularly about work with older young people in the past, has been a lack of any real therapeutic... Mm. basis for it, or even a theory, you know. And I think that's changing slowly. I think we are seeing some places, you know, some people, some places realizing that you can put all the services you want in, you can put all the law you want in. Actually, when it comes down to it, it's the relationship between the young person and the workers that matters. And I'd like to see it change quicker, but I think that is happening.
Okay. Darren, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I think in terms of all the services that are offered, in and amongst all that, there's a human being, and there's emotional needs in that human being. And the emotional welfare, the emotional well-being of individuals is not necessarily taken care of whilst in care, coming from care and into independent living. Until we can find a way of understanding the emotional needs of people in care, how can we then determine a way of understanding their emotional needs post-care and follow that through for the rest of their life? Because if you're an emotionally stable young person, you're going to be an emotionally stable older person. And we need to have that sense of understanding from that emotional point of view. Okay. All that patchwork stuff and plastering over with this service and that service is one thing. But let's not forget, people are people and we're human beings at the end of the day. We've got emotional needs and need to be taken care of.
There's Michael and there's a lady behind there. Mike,
Mike Lindsay from the Office of the Children's Rights Director. Two questions, hopefully very quick questions. One about housing and accommodation and just reflecting on the emotional needs of young people leaving care, which is one thing that young people consistently tell us and other organisations is something that we don't consistently do that well. Is whether or not, in spite of the prevailing legislation and practice, we should be doing more to challenge the somewhat perverse assumption that young people are rather young people leaving care rather uniquely have to leave to live independently when they're brought up in care, mainly to live in groups, and the vast majority of young people leaving home are a lot older. I think about still around about the 24 mark, are leaving
it's
home.
Older.
Are living.
25% of males in England at home at 31. Not as high as Italian men. But.
And according to research by Mike Steed, about 99.4% of them are leaving to live with other people.
Yeah.
Exactly. So should we be doing more to challenge this perverse assumption that young people leave care to live independently? The second question is on care to work. I think there's something inherent within that in terms of a challenge to local authorities to demonstrate as corporate parents that they wish to be good and the best parents they possibly can be. That means doing what good parents very often do, and that's you take your care leavers into the family business.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Sarah, I'd like you to start on a very good point that, Sarah, on the housing implications of what Mike said.
That is an interesting one, because when I kind of like ran through sort of the lists that very much were devised for when they were developing the Supporting People program in terms of acknowledging groups of people who needed a bit of extra support to maintain independent living or gain independent living. There's not necessarily very easily a group that says people leaving care or where it fits within that. It was very much around young people at risk or young people homelessness. So there's not necessarily, and I wouldn't necessarily want to categorise, but what it means is it's difficult to have that conversation in terms of who you speak to and what you say in terms of challenging the solution, the housing solution that you might want to develop for people leaving care. I mean, you could see that a lot of supported housing accommodation might be something that would be suitable as long as it was carefully placed, obviously, in terms of some of the needs of people within a group. But I do think we've got a challenging situation in being able to deliver and identify and deliver housing that fits those needs. And it is about how you actually have those conversations and build that awareness into and that forward planning into housing needs assessments and the things that are going to shape the decisions that happen locally around what kind of accommodation do we want built where. And that's a big and complex discussion to have, where I don't think we perhaps have necessarily engaged with and listened to enough the information that we can get from social care in terms of care leavers. And I do think that's where we need to identify where we can have those conversations, whether the health and wellbeing boards will be the place to have it in terms of future-proofing some of the decisions we make about services and how we might actually look at supported housing as a solution within that.
OK. Martin, the family business.
Can I just answer the accommodation one that? First? Because right. I think there are two issues that get in the way of that, and I think you're right that it isn't logical necessarily for young people to go into their own places. First thing is, because of young people's past experience of either group living or foster care, what they're telling us very often is that they want their own place, and that's something coming from them. The second is a more structural issue that very often the offer of permanent social housing is a once-only offer. It's at 18 and never. And therefore, a young person who goes and shares house for 2 or 3 years, comes back, can't get that. Sorry. So there's that. There are barriers to it. From care to it. Sorry, do you want to say something?
I was just going to say that might change with some of the differences and tendencies that come up. But nevertheless, what concerns me is that entry into social housing might still have to be at a point of crisis, which is what worries me about that.
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know if that was one. And the working in the family business, yes. And that's one of the things that From Care to Work is trying to do with local authorities, is to get them that to realise and recognise that they can provide opportunities for young people across the council. And if very often that is by plugging and pushing the corporate parent line. And that's one thing we're doing.
Okay. I think we had two lined up, haven't we? Yeah, we'll deal with those two. You can say who you are and what your question is.
Andrea Warman from the Nationwide Association of Fostering Providers. I'm really picking up a point a few questions ago, but it's an observation, but also really for Darren and for Claire, because I was really interested how you picked up on the relationship angle, but the peer relationships. And I've thought over the years, listening to stories and experiences of people who grew up in care, how important, particularly in the residential home situation, peers have been, and how those have been lifelong relationships, and how people have turned to each other where there's absolutely no blood or legal tie for support when there's been no one else around. Mm. And I'm really interested in how we pick that up and channel it in a positive way. We often talk about the negative influence, and we're aware that, very sadly, sometimes peers draw young people into, you know, deviancy or whatever. But we can channel it in a positive way and perhaps look beyond the care world, but look to age peers who are in other circumstances, who for whatever reason are having more positive experiences, to actually work with peers, their peers, who are in the care system.
Yeah. Now, we happen to have in the audience here today, Delma, who set up the national... Would you like to... You don't mind if I ask Delma to say something yet about this? Because it's your peers and care is your... You've created an organisation, so...
We're on my way.
Yeah.
It will do.
Okay.
Just stand up and tell us a bit about...
I don't want to stand up.
All right, okay. Just tell us what you do, what your...
No, I mean, again, Mike's here, I'm here, you know, 15 years ago we developed the Care Leavers Association.
Hello. Yeah, we worked at setting up the Care Leavers Association 15 years ago, and it was a collective, again, of care leavers. And there's lots of us out here, you know, we're professionals, and we're, you know, we're kind of very skilled in our fields, whether it's mental health, whether it's law, various areas. And we want people to use our skills, you know, we want people to make use of us. And someone mentioned Ealing earlier, how care leavers were making this centre work for young people. And it's not good enough just to be a professional. Sometimes you need that strong empathy, you know, you need that, you know, the passion to want to change people's lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have got a whole network of care leavers that
and your
are...
your peer work stuff, though, as well.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
That's what the question was about, was all the peers,
Peer work, does
that?
Oh, yeah,
brothers
we work together. Yeah. What, siblings?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have the charity siblings together, obviously, where a lot of our, you know, people that have come to our services are now living together.
That's...
They're supporting each other. I mean, that's really working really well. I know Mike mentioned that, and it's really important to keep... whatever sense of family people have.
Yeah.
You know, so I want people to keep that in mind. And something Martin touched on earlier, he said something like, we're not always in touch with the lives of care leavers and what it's like in employment. It just makes me think that, you know, the contracts you have when you go to work, you know, the job security, the pension plans, the private health care, you know, if people could think about the same... spend as much time on the children as they do their own jobs, things might change as well.
Okay, thanks, Delmi. Yeah, sorry to land that on you. There was another question, wasn't there? And then, yeah, what time shall we...
2 minutes. Mark.
2 minutes, okay, because then people can nobble anybody at... What's it, what's the posh word for it these days? Network.
Network.
People can network.
Nobbling is good.
Yep, okay. I'll try and be 30 seconds. Jonathan Standy from the National Centre for English Residential Childcare. And my colleague next to me, we've not spoken, but talking about leaving care. And I've been grappling with the ideas of values and concepts and the practicalities of it. So why leaving care? And the young people's experience of leaving care and the disjuncture between leaving care and corporate parenting particularly. So thank you, Care Leavers Association, for bringing into our thinking about the idea of the life course and maybe introduce another one called the life space, where what leaving care means to the young person in their own life. But I've just been doing a research review for the Independent Children's Homes Association on stability, continuity and felt security. And that's the last bit that's really key. The other two are important, but it's the last bit, felt security. We talk a lot about emotional well-being, but we don't talk about psychological well-being. And so my question might be about how might we develop an idea for care leavers across the life course, using peers, extending children in care councils, certainly health and well-being boards. There's a lot more to be done in there. So thank you, Care Leavers Association, for bringing that to us.
Okay. Do anybody want to have a quick go at that? Then we'll break for lunch. I know people must be absolutely starving. Claire?
Well, I think either myself or Dara, I mean, obviously, could say this. I mean, in terms of the work that the Care Leavers Association is doing, I think we will be, you know, we want to have a big role in widening the scope of peer mentoring, you know, so older care leavers, intergenerational work, also, Younger Care Leavers, the Young People's Project. You know, for the Young People's Project, I actually go out and I seek those young people who have slipped the net, i.e. they don't categorise for support anymore, who might be sort of, you know, unemployed and 21 or 22 or 23. And the way I'm going to try to do that, and I have been trying to do that, is through housing providers. So perhaps we should have a conversation about how we could do that, because I think there's definitely scope for, in particular with the Leaving Care Guide and developing independent living skills, training and support around self-help and identity and a whole host of issues that come with that. I think, you know, there should be a lead role in developing that with the Care Leavers Association and you know, a national programme.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Thanks, everybody on the panel. So.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.